Chapter 2. Reversing Type 2 Diabetes. Remarkably, my research has shown that it is possible to reverse diabetes, to decrease blood sugar, medication doses, and the risk of complications, and this chapter will show you how, using surprisingly simple diet changes. I will also share some surprising new findings about the causes of type 2 diabetes, changes inside your body's cells that can be detected years before diabetes starts. Evidence suggests that switching to a healthier diet has a powerful influence on the workings of your cells, as you will see. All doctors and dietitians recognize that if you have diabetes, your body does not process sugar very well, which is to say that the amount of sugar in your bloodstream is too high. Researchers learned long ago that if it stays high, you are at risk for many health problems down the road. To lower your blood sugar, most medical professionals are likely to prescribe a diet that includes very little sugar. They will also ask you to limit starchy foods, such as bread, potatoes, rice, and pasta, because in your digestive tract, starch breaks apart to release sugar, that is, glucose. It seems to make sense. If your body cannot handle sugar, you have to be careful about eating too much sugar and anything that turns into it. Your medical team will also encourage you to space out your intake of starches and sugars throughout the day and from one day to the next so that it stays fairly even over time. Diabetes diets also generally cut calories to help you lose weight and limit certain fats to reduce the risk of heart disease and other complications. That, in a nutshell, is a typical traditional diabetes diet. It is certainly logical, and some people greatly benefit from following it. The problem is that for most people, this sort of diet change has only a very limited effect. Weight loss is usually modest, and the diet alone typically is not enough to bring blood sugar under control. Sooner or later, you and your doctor are likely to decide that the diabetes diet is not helping very much, and your doctor will add various drugs. You may need 1, 2, or even 3 different oral medications. Eventually, your doctor may consider adding insulin injections. And because many people with diabetes also have high blood pressure or high cholesterol levels, doctors often add medications to tackle these problems too. Instead of helping you reduce or avoid medications, the diet seems to be a stepping stone on the way to an ever-increasing list of drugs. The first glimmer that there might be a better way came from a look at the prevalence of diabetes around the world. Large population studies showed that diabetes was rare in Japan, China, Thailand, and other Asian countries. It was similarly rare in parts of Africa. These studies also showed something else. People in countries where diabetes was uncommon were not following anything like a diabetes diet. They did not avoid carbohydrates. They ate starchy foods every day. In Asia and Africa, rice and other grains, starchy vegetables, bean dishes, and noodles are staples. In fact, researchers found that people in these countries ate considerably more carbohydrates than North Americans or Europeans do, yet diabetes was relatively rare. So were weight problems. While obesity is found in more than 30% of American adults, it occurred in less than 1% of Japanese adults following a traditional diet. Heart disease and several forms of cancer were rare too. Longevity among Japanese adults was better than that of North Americans or Europeans. That is, until they moved to Vancouver or Seattle, Chicago, Atlanta, or Washington, D.C. For a Japanese adult, a move to North America dramatically increased the risk of diabetes. Heart disease, obesity, and other problems became much more common, too. Now, if you are worrying that I am going to ask you to adopt a traditional Japanese diet, relax. It's not a bad idea, but it is not what this book is about. I raise this international comparison simply to make an important point. Carbohydrates do not cause diabetes, and a diet that focuses on keeping carbohydrates out of your diet is not a powerful way to manage, let alone reverse, the disease. If anything, healthy, complex carbohydrates help prevent it. Think about what happens when an Asian man or woman switches to a Western lifestyle. Hamburgers, fried chicken, cheese, and other Western fare come into the diet, while rice and noodles are gradually forgotten. The diet becomes fattier and much higher in protein, while carbohydrate-rich rice and noodles and other starchy foods fall by the wayside. Tragically, that is exactly what is happening. What's more, Asian men and women need not leave home for these changes to occur. McDonald's has come to them, Burger King, KFC, and other Western eating habits have also invaded Asia. Meat, cheese, and other greasy foods are displacing rice and vegetables. As the Japanese diet has become westernized, the prevalence of diabetes has exploded. In studies of adults in Japan over age 40, diabetes prevalence was between 1 and 5% prior to 1980. By 1990, it had gone up to 11 to 12%. Statistical projections suggest it will rise even further. It turns out that the genes that allow diabetes to occur are surprisingly common among the Japanese, but as long as they stuck to their rice-based traditional diet, the disease was mostly held in check. The diabetes genes lay dormant like seeds on dry soil. Once rice fell out of fashion and Western eating habits took hold, the genetic traits started to show themselves. So, if people in Asia or Africa who eat lots of carbohydrates have very little diabetes, and if the disease becomes more and more common as carbohydrates are excluded from the diet, researchers have had to conclude that a high carbohydrate diet is not the cause of the disease. In fact, the culprit seems to be lurking in our Western diets. The inescapable fact is that the problem is not carbohydrates, that is, sugar and starch. The problem is in how the body processes them. If we can repair your body's ability to absorb and use carbohydrates, not only can you enjoy healthy carbohydrate-rich foods without worry, but diabetes itself ought to improve, perhaps even go away. A look inside your body will show you what I mean. A look inside your body. Your pancreas, an organ in your abdomen, produces insulin. As you know by now, insulin is a hormone, and the pancreas sends it into your bloodstream to travel to the various cells of the body. Like a key sliding into a lock, insulin attaches to a receptor on the cell's surface and causes the cell membrane to permit glucose to enter. Insulin does the same thing for the next cell, and the next, and the next. It attaches to a receptor on the cell's surface, opens the door, and ushers glucose in. In type 2 diabetes, this system does not work properly. Your pancreas makes insulin, and insulin travels to each cell, but when it arrives, it has trouble opening the door. It is as if the lock has somehow become jammed and the key no longer works. This is insulin resistance. Yes, the insulin key is there, but it has trouble doing its job. Glucose cannot get into the cells, and it builds up in the bloodstream. Imagine the workings of a lock on a typical door. What if someone were to jam chewing gum into the lock? There's nothing wrong with your key, really nothing wrong with the lock, except that it is now filled with gum. To make it work again, we need to clean it out. The new approach to diabetes is based on cleaning out your biological locks. Our goal is to help your insulin key work the way it is supposed to. The new diabetes diet. As far back as the early 1900s, researchers were adjusting people's diets to try to improve insulin sensitivity. Over the years, many, like me, have been inspired by the fact that foods that are commonly eaten in Asia or Africa somehow help prevent diabetes. In 1979, researchers at the University of Kentucky studied 20 men with type 2 diabetes, all of whom had been taking an average of 26 units of insulin per day. The experimental diet included plenty of vegetables, fruits, whole grains, and beans, so it was high in fiber and carbohydrate. The diet was nearly vegetarian, with very little animal fat. In fact, very little fat of any kind. After just 16 days on the program, more than half of the men were able to stop taking insulin entirely, and their blood sugar levels were lower than before. For the remaining men, insulin doses were cut dramatically. That was an amazing and rapid result. But the study was short, and the participants lived on the research ward for its duration. It was unclear whether a similar result would be seen in people living on their own and preparing their own meals, and whether it would be sustained over the long term. A study conducted at the University of California, Los Angeles, 197 men enrolled in a 3-week diet change and exercise program, showed much the same thing. Of this group, 140 were able to discontinue their medications. That was a great result, and it occurred very quickly. The study's limitation, from our point of view, was that it could not separate the effects of diet from those of exercise. Both are important, of course. But if we want to track down the best diet for diabetes, it is important to keep everything else constant while the diet is being tested. Several years ago, my research team began a series of studies to see what diet alone could do. We tested a diet that focused not on limiting carbohydrates, but rather on getting as much fat off the plate as possible. We thought if we could do that, perhaps we could clean out the lock mechanism that opens the cell doors. We began with a small pilot study, which I mentioned briefly in the introduction. Most of the participants were surprised to see rice, pasta, sweet potatoes, and beans on the menu, and even more surprised that the diet did not limit carbohydrates at all. No matter how long they had had diabetes or how nervous they felt about the idea of putting carbohydrates back onto their plates, we put no limit on carbs at all. There was also no limit on portions. Most of our participants were overweight, but even so, we did not ask them to limit portions or cut calories. What we zeroed in on was fat. We aimed to clean all the grease out of the participants' diet. So, instead of bacon and eggs for breakfast, they had to choose from old-fashioned oatmeal, half a cantaloupe, or whole grain toast. If they had chili for lunch, it was veggie chili. Instead of pasta topped with meat sauce, they got meatless marinara. For the duration of the study, we asked them to set aside animal products completely and stick to vegetarian foods. Needless to say, if there are no animal products in the diet, there is not a single drop of animal fat. We kept the use of vegetable oils as minimal as possible, too, and in order to isolate the effects of the diet, we asked the participants not to alter their normal activity patterns. No one was to add exercise to the regimen. Now, exercise is an important part of any healthy lifestyle, and ordinarily we would strongly encourage it. But this was a test of the diet alone, and for scientific reasons, exercise was not to be a part of it. At the end of the study period, everyone weighed in. In just 12 weeks, the average participant had lost 16 pounds. Their fasting blood sugar had dropped 28%. Two-thirds of the participants on diabetes medications were able to reduce or discontinue them in that short period of time. All this occurred without any limits on calories, portions, or carbohydrates, and without exercise. These effects were significantly greater than those seen in a control group carefully following the diet guidelines of the American Diabetes Association, ADA. That was impressive. But why did it happen? How does a diet that gives a green light to pasta, rice, and all the other foods that people with diabetes thought they had to live without, and one that completely disregards calories and avoids exercise, cause blood sugar to plummet and weight to easily drop away? To answer that question, we designed another study. This one included a group of women who were moderately or severely overweight but did not have diabetes. Once again, we zeroed in on animal fat and vegetable oils. Our participants set animal products aside and kept oils to a bare minimum. And they were free to implement the diet guidelines in their own way, whether they ate at home or ate out, so it was a good test of how the diet would work in real life. For one person, eating out might have meant mushroom stroganoff with steamed vegetables. For another, it might have been vegetable sushi with miso soup and salad. As long as they avoided animal products and kept oils to a minimum, they were free to shape their meals to their liking. For comparison, We included a control group whose members followed what you might think of as a typical cholesterol-lowering diet. It cut back on red meat while emphasizing poultry and fish, along with plenty of vegetables, fruits, and whole grains. The results were quick and impressive. The vegetarian group participants lost about a pound per week. After 14 weeks, they had lost an average of 13 pounds, compared to 8 pounds for the control group. By now, it was no surprise that this diet causes weight loss, but we went a step further. We sent our participants to the laboratory for a glucose tolerance test, which allowed us to measure how their bodies responded to sugar and how well their body's insulin was working. Each participant swallowed a dose of sugary syrup, and we took blood samples every half hour to measure rises in blood sugar and insulin. From this laboratory data, we were able to calculate each woman's insulin sensitivity and track how it changed as the study progressed. The results were remarkable. The tests showed that our participants were physically changing. Based on their laboratory measurements, it was clear that their body's cells were becoming more and more sensitive to insulin. By the 14-week point, their insulin sensitivity had improved by 24%. In other words, something about the diet reactivated their natural insulin's ability to open cell doors to glucose. What that means, of course, is that the diet was addressing the fundamental problem we see in type 2 diabetes. It was helping glucose get to where it belonged. The study turned up another particularly remarkable finding. In a laboratory at George Washington University, we measured the participants' metabolism, how fast their bodies burned calories. This was done by measuring how much oxygen they consumed minute by minute and how much carbon dioxide they produced after being given a test meal, 2 cans of a standard liquid formula. After 14 weeks on the experimental diet, it was clear that the participants had a significant increase in their after-meal calorie burn. Their after-meal calorie burning speed increased by 16%. What was happening was that the diet had made their cells more sensitive to insulin's action, so they were able to take in nutrients more quickly. Glucose got out of the blood and into the cells, where more of it could be burned up, so to speak. These calories are released as body heat rather than being stored as body fat. Scientists call this the thermic effect of food, and it provides a small extra edge for weight loss. Based on these and other studies, the National Institutes of Health, the research branch of the U.S. government, decided to fund a new study. Working with me on the project were researchers from George Washington University School of Medicine and the University of Toronto, and dietitians and physicians working with the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, a nonprofit organization I founded in 1985. The study included 99 people with type 2 diabetes. For 22 weeks, 49 of them followed a diet that was similar to those we had tested earlier. The diet was vegan, meaning that it included no animal products at all and was low in fat. Also, while we placed no limits on the amount of carbohydrates our participants could have, we encouraged everyone to be selective about the kinds of carbohydrates they ate. Instead of white bread, we encouraged them to choose rye or pumpernickel. Instead of baking potatoes, we favored sweet potatoes and yams. The remaining 50 participants followed a diet based on the ADA guidelines. Once again, we restricted exercise. Over the ensuing weeks, many participants found their blood sugar falling to the extent that they had to cut back on their diabetes medications. That was a happy outcome, but it was not our goal. In fact, we were trying to keep medications unchanged as much as we could so we could isolate the effect of the diet on their blood sugar. The combination of the diet and the blood sugar-lowering drugs was so powerful, however, that many participants had to reduce their doses or discontinue medications altogether to keep their blood sugar from dropping too low.